We own this country. We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. They're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
You're not used to hearing me here on Thursday evenings on Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is a special edition of Culture Vigilante here on Thursday evening right here on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Culture Vigilante is our usual spot is Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. We're there every Wednesday at 7 p.m. I usually sit in with the happy helpfulness of Cindy McGee from Show Me Patriots. Always glad to have her with me. Tonight, I'm flying solo because I wanted to play a special edition of an interview that we ran last night with Dwayne Weed of Oath Keepers. We had a great show last night. If you missed it, you can go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and go to the radio tab page and look for Culture Vigilante and click on last night's show lineup. And you'll be able to hear that whole entire show from we ran from 7 to 9 last night. But we had a great interview with Dwayne Weed last night as well from Oath Keepers. And we wanted to replay that interview for you tonight because we ran a little long and things kind of ended quickly at the end of the show. So we want to make sure that that interview got out to the folks in its entirety. So here it is, the interview with Dwayne Weed of Oath Keepers on Missouri Grassroots Radio Culture Vigilante. Enjoy. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio, and we are very happy to have with us again Dr. Dwayne Weed. Dr. Weed is here tonight to talk to us about some different aspects of things that he's been talking about before with us. He's a great survivalist. He's got a fabulous website, The New Survivalist, and he's been on with us to talk about those issues before, but now he's with us tonight to talk about Oath Keepers. And the mission that they have set forth for themselves to prepare folks for what they think is coming in the future and to talk about maybe some of the financial things that he wants to warn us about with the looming financial crisis that everybody's talking about. So thanks for being with me today, Dr. Weed.
Well, thank you for having me, Lisa.
Okay, so we have a lot to cover. There's just a lot of issues going on here. I contacted you a couple of weeks ago about coming back on the show and kind of talking about some of the issues that we've talked about in the past. You forwarded me an article from InfoWars about Oath Keepers and going operational, forming special civilization preservation teams. First of all, let's talk about what Oath Keepers is, because I'm a little bit familiar with it, but not a lot familiar with it. What is Oath Keepers?
Okay, Oath Keepers is a national organization. It was founded by Stuart Rhodes, who is a veteran, who is airborne. And Oath Keepers, Stuart is now a constitutional lawyer, and he also worked in Washington, D.C., for Ron Paul. He was working on Ron Paul's staff at one point in Washington, D.C., but he has a lot of experience both as a veteran and also as a constitutional lawyer, of course. But really, Oath Keepers was founded by Stuart and some of his veteran and police friends, I think largely as a response to what happened in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. And if people are not aware of the story there, as it turned out, in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, the mayor of New Orleans came out on the news media, and a lot of people have seen this video. It's posted on YouTube, famous video. He says, no one's going to be allowed to have any guns. And what happened was they actually sent, I'm not sure if it was police or National Guard, or but there are military guys. I think it was a lot. I think a lot of it was the police.
Right.
I think the National Guard was involved too. They actually sent people into the neighborhoods. These were neighborhoods that weren't actually destroyed by the hurricane, but went more into middle class neighborhoods, and they went door to door and did gun confiscation. And
there's very little.
I think it was kind of a testing ground. You know,
yeah.
I think they were using the disaster as kind of a testing ground to see if they could get, you know, their people to confiscate guns and to see what the American reaction would be.
Well, there was very little coverage of that aspect of the situation. That, you know, the mainstream media that I can recall did not really cover the fact that they were going door-to-door confiscating law-abiding citizens' guns.
Right, exactly. No, you won't see things like this in the mainstream media. Pretty much, they're pretty well controlled, pro government. You know, always portraying the government in a positive light. But there is a lot of it was covered by the local media down there, the local television stations, and they got a lot of footage of it. And so, a lot of the local news broadcasts have been archived on YouTube. And if you go on YouTube and do a search for gun confiscation after Katrina. Something like that. You'll come up with all kinds of videos showing these guys going door to door, banging on the doors, going in their houses. There's one video in particular that went viral because there was this little old lady in there, and they came in and they said, you know, you're going to have to go with us. And she said, and her home wasn't damaged at all. And she said, no, I'm fine right here. And they all came in her house, and she was in the kitchen there. And she pointed to her food stock, and she said, you can see I'm prepared here. I've got plenty of food and everything. And then she opened up her hand and had her little revolver in her hand, not pointing it at anyone, but just in her open palm, just showing them her revolver, saying, and you see, I'm protected here. I can take care of myself. And as soon as they saw the revolver, not pointed at anyone, not threatening or anything like that, they just tackled this lady, took her down, and injured her, you know, because she's a little fragile little lady. And anyway, they got that. There was a news crew there, and they got all of that on videotape. But that's a very interesting video.
My God,
to watch.
We had a great show last week about the militarization of the police, and that's just another example of it. And it's been going on for a lot longer than most people know.
Oh, right, exactly. But anyway, I think they were using Katrina, the way they handled this, I think they were using it as kind of a testing ground to see what, you know, see what their troops would do, see if they would follow these orders, and to see how the people would react. But anyway, as a reaction to that, of course, all of these guys who had done these gun confiscations, these are all people who had taken an oath to the Constitution. And I'm sure most people are aware that anybody who joins the American military or the police or the fire department and various other services like that, they all take an oath, and the oath that they take is not to the mayor, it's not to the president, it is not to their commanding officer. The oath that they take is to the Constitution of the United States. And, of course, the Constitution of the United States, in the Bill of Rights, you know, it allows us to... it doesn't allow us. I mean, our rights, actually, according to the Constitution and our Founding Fathers, our rights come, our natural rights, which means they come from God. But what the Constitution and Bill of Rights does is it just enumerates these rights just to make sure that the government is aware of them, you know, and so the Bill of Rights and Constitution doesn't give us our rights. It actually affirms our rights just to make sure the government knows that these are our rights. But anyway, the point is, all of these people who did this gun confiscation, they were violating their oath. You know, they take an oath to the Constitution before God. And so a lot of people like Stuart Rhodes, other people in the military who are liberty-minded, Constitution-minded, you know, they were just appalled at this situation. And they said, look, you know, we need to make sure that this kind of thing doesn't happen. We need to educate our people, educate other people in the military, our police officers, and remind them of their oath. And in situations like this, you know, their oath is, like I said, not to the mayor, you know, who comes out and says no one's going to be allowed to own guns, but their oath is actually to the Constitution. And, of course, Stuart Rhodes, being a constitutional lawyer, is well aware of the legalities of this, and that is, in those cases, the duty of those police and military is to obey, is to disobey. Their duty is not to obey an order if it is illegal. Their duty is to disobey any order that is unconstitutional. You know, so these guys should have remembered their oath, and they should have said, well, wait a minute, no, we're not going to do that. And actually, it turns out that some of the people down in New Orleans, I think some of the National Guard or some of the military, I'm not sure exactly what role they had or what, you know, what branch they were in, but I mean, some of them actually did refuse to do that. Some of them said, you know, look, this is not right, and they said that to his commanding officer, and the commanding officer said, yeah, you know what, you're right, we're not going to do this. So it actually, that was another thing that was not big in the news, but there were some people who did stand down. But unfortunately, there were far too many who did follow the unconstitutional orders.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so Stuart Rhodes and some other veterans and peace officers founded Oath Keepers. I think it was right about 2004, if I remember correctly, which would be about 10 years ago. They started Oath Keepers. As an organization for military, police, veterans, first responders, you know, fire department, firemen, anyone who's taken an oath to the Constitution, but they also opened up their membership to the general public, and they have what's called associate members, which means that if you did not serve in the military, if you're not a veteran or police officer or whatever, but you're just a concerned citizen, you can still join Oath Keepers. And as it turned out, especially here in our local St. Louis and St. Charles chapter, most of our members are actually associate members, which is what I am myself. I'm not a veteran. I'm just, you know, a concerned citizen. But, you know, concerned citizens who want to recruit peace officers and veterans and military personnel into the organization, so you know, so that we can so that we can educate them, so that when eventually, if they are ever faced with a choice like the people in New Orleans were faced with, you know, hopefully rather than just responding automatically like they're trained to do, just responding automatically to orders, you know, hopefully they will think about this, and more of them will stand up and you know, refuse to follow the unconstitutional orders.
Okay, Duane, okay, so this leads me to, I have a lot of questions swimming around in my head, and I'll try to be brief, but when a police officer or any law enforcement official takes their oath to, you know, to hold that position, don't they already swear to uphold the Constitution? Where does the disconnect happen?
Where does what happen?
Where does the disconnect happen?
Oh, where does the disconnect happen? Well, you know, I can tell you, they just don't think about it. You know, they when they first sign it. Well, I can kind of illustrate what happened with a young fella here that I know personally, someone in my family here, who he joined the military and he went off to boot camp. And then when he came back to St. Louis after being out of state for a while in boot camp, came back all, you know, all in his nice uniform and everything. And I talked to him a little bit because I, you know, I was aware of the oath that they all had to take. And I asked him, I said, you know, do you remember taking an oath when you were down there in boot camp? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, do you remember who you swore allegiance to? And he thought for a minute, and he couldn't tell me. And he just kind of made a guess, and he said, the president? And of course, you know, not to blame him, because he, you know, he's a 18, 19 year old kid, and you know, just right out of high school, practically doesn't, you know, not wise in the ways of the world like us older guys have become. And a lot of things were going on, of course, in boot camp. They were just being hit with a lot of information and other things from all directions. And so I don't blame him for not remembering this. But I said, no, I said, your oath was not to the president. Your oath was to the Constitution of the United States. And he said, oh, yeah, that's right. All right, so I think what happens is they take the oath, and then they just kind of forget about it. You know, then they get, as far as a peace officer is concerned, he takes the oath, you know, way back when he goes into police academy and or comes out of police academy, I'm not sure when, but and then he goes out in the streets. Well, then he has, you know, all this day-to-day training from his department, and then also, of course, the feds come in and, you know, do a lot of training for them. FEMA comes in and does some training for them. Department of Homeland Security comes in and does training for them. And when they do, they never remind them of that oath that they took back when they first signed up, you know. So I think it's something they just forget, and they just get, you know, tied, boggles down with their day-to-day activities, and they're just kind of trained and to just follow orders. They just don't think, you know, just don't think it through. And that's really the purpose of Oath Keepers, is to remind them so that they will, you know, think it through.
Okay. All right. So now that we have established the kind of the meaning of the Oath Keepers' mission, what is this latest development regarding this article from InfoWars that you sent me? It seems like you guys are, first of all, Oath Keepers is a national organization. You have chapters all over the country, and there is a website, and we'll get to that later on in the interview. But now, as the organization has grown over the years, there is there's a mission for you guys to kind of organize and reach out a little farther.
Right, right. Well, this is I've heard it worded. As a matter of fact, I think Stuart Rhodes, our founder, worded it this way. He said, Oath Keepers goes operational. And what this is this is sort of a response to what's happening to our country today. As we're, you know, approaching, fast approaching a critical, you know, disastrous type of situation. And what I mean by disasters, you know, you have all kinds of disasters. You can have, like in Katrina, you could have a hurricane. You also have man-made disasters, you know, like war, invasion of a foreign enemy, or a government coup or something like that. So there are all kinds of disasters that you can have, and they're not all natural disasters. But Stuart Rhodes and a lot of other people, too, are seeing a disaster right around the corner, of a man-made type disaster in the form of a financial collapse. And this is something that's been going on for years. It's something that's been predicted, you know, years ago. Ron Paul has talked about it a lot. Other people have too. A lot of the prognosticators, Gerald Flinty, Trends Research Journal. You know, people whose business it is to kind of forecast, you know, what's coming down the line. But with our financial situation, basically, as Ron Paul has said, is, you know, we're beyond the point of no return. You know, the dollar is going to collapse. We're going to have a currency collapse, and our entire economic system is going to be turned upside down, and who knows what kind of situation that could lead to, but it's not good. You know, in other words, it could be, you know, a disruption in supply chains, you know, as far as, like, food getting out there. You know, in other words, you know, food not getting to your grocery store shelves. You know, we're depending on food that is shipped in from faraway places. A lot of the food we get here in Missouri comes from California. So what we're basically talking about is some type of disruption, which could lead to food shortages. And as we've seen just recently with this cold weather, down there in, and this is a situation that we see occur over and over and over again, down there in Georgia, people preparing for the cold, running out and buying everything off the grocery store shelf, and the shelves were ended up empty, and then people got nasty with each other and started fighting over things and stuff like that. And that was just, 3 inches of snow?
Right, exactly. People are not prepared for any kind of looming disaster. And I would agree with you. I mean, everybody's talking about the looming financial crisis that's about to hit and the inflation that's about to come. And, you know, they're expecting everybody to lose all of their savings and then their investments.
Right.
And it's not pretty.
Right. No, it's not. Stuart Rhodes has, when he says Oathkeepers is going operational, basically what he's talking about is he's talking about preparing for a disaster. In other words, Oathkeepers are, as you know, our chapters. Oathkeepers is a nationwide organization. We do have chapters especially more recently, we're having chapters that are starting locally. And these are like people who had signed up with Oathkeepers at the national organization, but then start meeting up with other Oathkeepers, you know, in their community. So this civilization preservation program that he's talking about, as far as you think about the wording civilization preservation, if you think about a situation where there's like, in a worst case scenario, you have a collapse of society and an interruption of services, and who knows how bad, you know, how bad it could get. There could be rioting and crimes, you know,
sure,
which could totally overwhelm the police. And again, this is one of the situations as Oathkeepers that we're, you know, that we're preparing for, as far as you know, if martial law is implemented, which martial law in and of itself is illegal. There's nothing in the Constitution that allows for martial law. So martial law in and of itself in this country is unconstitutional and is illegal. A lot of people don't realize that. But as Ron Paul so aptly said a few years back, he says, you know, it's not during good times that we really need our rights. He says, it's in bad times, you know, that our rights are most important. In other words, our Bill of Rights, our Bill of Rights was written they evolved at a time period after the Revolution or during and after the Revolutionary War. And if you look at all 10 of the Bill of Rights, they were things that the British government had implemented among the American colonies, and it was martial law. You know, what the British had declared was the British had declared that Americans were not going to be governing themselves anymore. Instead, you know, General Thomas Gage, British general in Boston, Massachusetts, he became the governor of Massachusetts, and in effect what they did at that time, and they wouldn't allow the colonists to govern themselves, is they actually put the colonists under martial law. And they were doing all these things like warrantless searches of the American people, detaining American citizens without due cause or without warrants. Anyway, if you look down the list of the 10 Bill of Rights, the British government, even housing soldiers in American homes,
right?
The British government was violating every one of these 10 Bill of Rights, and it was a state of martial law, and that was the reason for our Declaration of Independence, and that was the reason for our Revolutionary War, and it was reason for our Bill of Rights. So, like Ron Paul said, it's not during the good times that we need our Bill of Rights. It is in times like these. You know, in other words, in times when the government would declare martial law, you know, that's not an excuse to take away our Bill of Rights. That's the time that we need them the most.
So in this statement where Oath Keepers is going operational, is this a plan to steer the government back on track? Is it a plan to help the people navigate through martial law? What is it exactly?
Well, no, it's not a plan to steer the government back on track. It's a plan to help people deal with it, to help people to get through. And like the name says, civilization preservation is to preserve civilization. In other words, it's to preserve some type of order in locally, you know, in your own community there. You know, it's strictly local. But some of the areas that we teach, like I said, this is all, you know, your basic prepper, disaster preparedness type stuff. Is one of the categories is communications. One thing that we're involved with, that we're getting involved with right now, is ham radios. All the Oath Keepers in our area now, we're all getting little ham radios. You can get these little handheld ham radios for $30. It's not something that's really expensive to get into. You can take a class. We're getting licensed, you know, so that we can go ahead and start communicating. And I have people tell me, well, you know what, during an emergency, you don't have to have a license. And I said, yes, that's right, but we're not in an emergency right now, and we need to learn how to use our radios, and you have to have a license to get on there and learn how to use radios. But anyway, so when the grid goes down, think about if there's a loss of electricity, say from an EMP attack, you know, say... which knocks out our electricity, and we don't have internet anymore. We don't have telephone service. The cell phone towers, which require electricity, are down. Your cell phone isn't working. You know, how are we going to communicate? Well, ham radios, battery-operated ham radios, you know, operating radio to radios, a way that we can, you know, stay in contact with other people in our group. And we're learning a first aid, you know, just your basic disaster stuff, how to take care of someone who's injured, who especially if you can't immediately get them, because during riots and things like that, all of the emergency responders are going to be busy, and it may be hours or days before they can get to you, you know. So if you have someone who gets injured, you know, it might not be just a matter of calling 911 and having an ambulance show up in 5 or 10 minutes, you know. In other words, we're trying to learn to be able to take care of the person, you know, until we can get, you know, professional help. Other things like scouting, we're getting into land navigation, compass reading, search and rescue, wilderness survival, bush skills. You know, these are just, you know, your basic prepper things. Learn, you know, just basically what we're talking about is just learning to do things on your own, and not relying on government services to do anything for you, in preparing for a time when those government services, you know, may be interrupted, and you're left on your own, you know. And I think that if we ever reach a situation like that, I think your greatest asset is going to be your network, or in other words, you know, the people around you. You know, your neighbors are going to be your greatest asset. Your network, like with Oath Keepers, you know, our fellow Oath Keeper members, you know, people that we've been working and training with all along, you know, other people who've been preparing, you know, putting aside food storage and things like that. You know, people who have prepared and are not going to be, you know, just out there totally helpless, you know, looking for a disaster relief. You know, the last thing we want to do is to do what a lot of people in New Orleans were reduced to after the hurricane, and that is depending on a government-run shelter. You know, we saw the horror stories that took place, you know, in the New Orleans Astrodome. The shelters down there. We don't want to end up in a shelter. You know, we don't want to be so hungry to where we're having to go to a government shelter to get food. You know, in other words, we want to be prepared to be able to take care of ourselves.
So this is a fabulous program. So basically, the prepper mentality is kind of reaching out into the public, into the community, to try to grow the prepper mentality, to relieve the dependence on government during a disaster, during an unfortunate situation. Don't want to go as far as, you know, martial law, but it could be. You just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
and trying to educate the folks and help them build their networks in their community. That's a great idea. It's fabulous. How successful are you guys? I know you and I live in the same community, Duane, but how successful is this program going across the country? Do you know?
It varies from place to place. I mean, you know, in a lot of places there's nothing going on at all, and then in some places people are quite organized. You know, there are some rural communities where a lot of like-minded people are getting together, and they have a very good, you know, very good network where everybody around them, you know, is on the same page, and everybody has their food storage, and, you know, you don't have to worry when a disaster strikes. You don't have to worry about people who haven't prepared, you know, coming and knocking on your door, you know, and wanting your food. But unfortunately, in far, far, far too many places, you know, people are just not prepared at all. And again, we're reminded of this anytime something happens, you know, like recently with the cold weather and the ice storms and the snow, you know, we're, you know, something really minor and insignificant that people should be able to deal with, like 3 inches of snow, you know, causing the grocery store shelves to be bare, and then people.
Yeah, the city's practically shut down.
Like crazy.
Yeah, so correct me if I'm wrong. I'm going to go down a road here. Maybe it's way off base. But are you finding maybe that there's more acceptance of this kind of attitude about prepping and community outreach and community preservation in the rural areas rather than in the urban areas?
Oh, yes, yes, certainly. And, first of all, you know, people in the rural areas are already largely self-sufficient, to a large extent, not completely, but they're, compared to the people in the city, you know, I know a lot of people in rural Missouri, have a lot of friends who live in rural Missouri, and, you know, I've got everybody that I can think of has chickens, you know, and they raise their own eggs, they raise most of their own meat, most of them have cows, and produce their own milk, some of them have goats. But they all hunt, you know, they all have firearms, they're all ready to go. I mean, and not only ready, but on a regular basis, you know, they go out. I mean, I know a lot of people who their primary source of meat is hunting, all right. And then, of course, they have, I mean, being out in the area like that, you have to be self-sufficient to a certain extent. You know, you might not even have water. The municipal water supply to you. You might have your own well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, certainly, just because of their lifestyle, people in rural Missouri are far, far, far greater than people. And I live, you know, pretty close to the city. I live in a suburb here. Yeah, I live on the east side of 270. And you know, the people I see around me. They, and the best case scenario is they've got 3 days of food in their house, and that would reduce them down to, you know, eating peanut butter.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. So I mean, with the impending financial doom that everybody's predicting, you know, you can always hope that it doesn't happen, but, you know, if history repeats itself, it's absolutely going to happen, and we're all going to be in big trouble. Do you have any advice for folks, or is there any preparation in this plan for financial safety, or is there a financial safety net, or is that a topic for another show?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, any topic that you take in this field, I mean, you could take any topic and make a whole show out of it. You know, we could make a whole show just out of water, you know.
Yeah.
Getting clean water or food preservation or whatever. As far as financial, what people have to do is as far as the timeline, I have no idea what the timeline is. There's so many factors that can play in. There's so many things that they can do to delay it, you know, for another month and another month and another month. All I know is everyone who I've been listening to, like Gerald Salenti, Trends Research Journal. I've been listening to Gerald for over 10 years, and Gerald has, he puts out a journal, Trends Research Journal, and he's been on the news quite often. I've been listening to Gerald for a long time, and Gerald has been right on the money as far as making his predictions and everything. But people like Gerald Celente, you can definitely tell there's much more urgency in their predictions, you know, as far as the collapse is concerned, the financial collapse. You can see a lot more urgency to where it's feeling like, you know, 2014. Personally, my own personal idea is based on talking to some of these other people. It's 2014, 2015. It's probably going to be very, very, very significant years. You know, some of the things that we've been seeing coming for like the last 10 or 20 years are probably going to hit here toward the latter half of 2014 or 2015.
Mm.
So, but I hate to put a date down there. You know, I hate to put a date because then as soon as you don't hit that date, you know, then of course you're wrong, and then from then on you're wrong. But I'm just telling what my own personal feeling on the matter is, and everybody is feeling increased urgency. As far as what you can do, what you can think about is you can think about your dollars becoming less and less worthless. Like right now, the dollar that we have right now is worth a nickel compared to the dollars we had back in the 70s.
Wow.
And that dollar wasn't worth nearly as much as what it was back in 1913 when they founded the Federal Reserve. So we're definitely, what's going to happen when the dollar collapses, and the dollar is collapsing. It's not like the dollar is going to collapse. The dollar is collapsing right now. I mean, the disaster that we see coming is occurring right now, and it's been going on for a while. It's just kind of in slow motion, you know. It's the dollar's collapsing in slow motion. And just one example is that the fact that a $1970 worth of nickel today. I mean,
right.
that's a collapse of the currency right there. But, of course, as it gets toward the end, though, it accelerates exponentially, and at some point, you know, we could end up with the Zimbabwe dollar where the dollar, you know, it takes $1 billion. And literally in Zimbabwe, that's what happened. It took $1 billion just to buy a loaf of bread. So protect yourself. Just, you know, stay out of paper dollars and buy real assets like gold and silver. You know, right now gold and silver prices are low, and people look at that and they say, well, you know, that silver hasn't been a good investment. Look how low it is right now. But still, even though silver's low right now, it's still $20 an ounce, whereas, you know, 10 years ago it was more like $5
right.
an ounce. All right, well, so just look over the last 10 years, from five, even though it went up to 50 and now it's gone back down to 20, it's still $20 now compared to $5 an ounce. And during that same time period, what has the dollar done? You know, the dollar's lost, just in that time period, dollar's lost half its value. And the way that we see the dollar losing its value is in the prices of things. You know, I mean, the dollar, when you open your wallet, it still looks like it's the same size and everything. But, you know, you take that dollar to the grocery store, and you know, when you buy something in the grocery store, that dollar buys half as much as what it would buy, you know, just 10 years ago.
And in the event of a financial collapse, it would be good. It's a good form of currency for trade and barter.
Right. Yeah. But it's a good way to protect the value of your wealth. You know. Because as your dollars are slipping away into nothing, your gold and silver is still maintaining its value. And there's an inverse relationship. But we know the dollar is falling. And we know there's always, throughout history of the world, there's always an inverse relationship between gold and silver and the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we know as the dollar goes down, gold and silver is going to go up. I mean, and we've seen that over the last years, you know. It has, despite their attempts to manipulate it, and I still think the price is way low right now because of manipulation. All right, but the good news is that means that right now it's a good deal to buy gold and silver.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've manipulated the price lower than what it should be. It's a bargain.
Okay.
Right now.
All right.
So that's one way to protect yourself, protect your money.
I would love to have you come. We've talked about this before, and I think it's just a matter of we need to schedule around our schedules. But I would love to have you come back and discuss these issues, because all of this is crucial. You know, 10 years ago, we would have never thought we would be sitting in this situation where we would be watching the collapse of our government and the bastardization of our Constitution and the peril, you know, facing the peril of our economic situation the way we are. I would love to have you come back and talk on these topics very soon if you're available. I'm going to kind of chase you down and pull you back in. Okay, so I want to give people an opportunity to get informed and involved. How can folks get involved in Oath Keepers? I'm assuming you're looking to reach out to folks to grow this number.
Right. Well, great. We just started the St. Louis chapter just within a year. It's only been about 8 or 10 months ago, and we've grown quite a bit. Every meeting that we meet twice a month, and every meeting that we have new people who come. But we meet the second Wednesday and fourth Tuesday of every month at 7 o'clock p.m., and this is the St. Charles, St. Louis Oath Keepers, and eventually, as our numbers grow, we're going to split off, and St. Charles is going to have their own group, which will meet on the other side of the Missouri River. Right now, we're meeting together because we're such a new organization. As far as our chapter is concerned, but we meet the second Wednesday and fourth Tuesday of every month, 7 o'clock p.m. at Half Bible Will Travel Church on 1745 Craig Road. And we're not affiliated with the church, I need to say that, but the church is just kind enough to allow us to use one of their meeting rooms. An important thing to remember is that you do not have to be military veteran or peace officer to join Oath Keepers, and the vast majority of our members are associate members like myself. I'm the president of our St. Louis St. Charles chapter, and I'm an associate member. So associate members have the same standing as veterans, military, because a lot of people think that you have to be a peace officer or to be Oath Keeper, and that is not true at all. But anyway, we have a website now. It's a new website. What I'm doing basically is each meeting we have a presentation. We have a guest that comes in. At our last meeting this past week, we had a major who came in who is he's the founder of the Eastern Missouri Militia, and he came in and talked to us. But we had someone who came in and talked to us about food preservation, someone who came in and talked to us about making your own colloidal silver for your natural antibiotics. So we're having we cover a topic each meeting, and I'm recording those on my video camera and posting those on our website to archive them. And that website, that's our local website, is stlouisoathkeepers.info, and that's St. Louis, S-T-L-O-U-I-S, with no punctuation, stlouisoathkeepers.info. And the national organization for Oath Keepers, if you're outside this area, is oathkeepers.org.
Okay. And you have a great website also. If you're at all interested in survivalist and prepper techniques, Dr. Dwayne Weed has a website like none other I've seen out there, with just all of the best information on every possible question you could have about prepping. Is thenewsurvivalist.com. And we're going to have him back as soon as I can pull him in to talk about some of the issues that he's got posted on his website. Dr. Weed, thank you so much for this. I also want to stress, too, that I don't know very much about Oath Keepers, but I do know that you guys are very community-based. I know that you go out into the community and do good deeds all the time. You guys have been organized for a while doing that. I've run into a few of the Oath Keepers around town. It's a great organization to look into. I hope you all will at least go to the website and check it out, and go to thenewsurvivalist.com. And Dr. Weed, thank you so much for being on with me today.
Thank you, Lisa. My pleasure.
Okay, we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I hope you have enjoyed this special edition of Culture Vigilante. Join us tomorrow and Saturday night when Dave Court will be on trying to convince everybody why we need an Article 5 convention. He hasn't convinced me yet, but he's doing a pretty good job of convincing everybody else. Join him on Friday and Saturday nights here right on Missouri Grassroots Radio. On Tuesday nights, we are so pleased to have with us Cynthia Davis. She's on at 8 p.m. on Tuesday nights every week with Homefront. And we'll be back again Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time here for Culture Vigilante. We really appreciate you joining us here on this special edition of Culture Vigilante. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Check us out on the webpage. Join us so that you can get our special updates and information on our radio broadcasts. And until next Wednesday, we look forward to seeing you folks all again. Again, there's a lot of information on the webpage, Missouri Grassroots Coalition. We spend a lot of time trying to engage and inform the folks in Missouri and beyond on all the constitutional issues that are important of the day. We hope that you have found this programming informative and helpful. Look for us on Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook, and look for Culture Vigilante on Facebook and Twitter. And until next week, thanks very much. We'll talk to you again soon.